The Tuesday, May 25th, 2021 edition of the City Council meeting. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George?
Here.
Councilmember Storton?
Here.
Councilmember Barnidge? Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Here.
Mayor Ray Russell?
Here. Would you please join me in the flag salute? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I'm in my classroom, so I actually have a flag right there. Tonight, we will take some public comment with regard to our closed session agenda items tonight. So I will go ahead and open up public comment at this time and ask AGP if we have anybody who would like to speak.
If anyone would like to make a comment, please raise your hand using the raise hand button. If you're calling in by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you so much. So now I will ask the city attorney to announce our closed session items.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The successor agency to the dissolved Arroyo Grande Redevelopment Agency will be meeting in closed session for a conference with real property negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. The property is assessor's parcel number 006-151-027, located at Fay Avenue and El Camino Real. And the City Council has two closed session agenda items this afternoon. The first will be a conference involving a joint powers agency, the Five Cities Fire Authority, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.96C. The discussion will concern a conference with labor negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. And the second will be a performance evaluation of the city manager. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. That will take us to our adjournment to, it says that we will reconvene at open session at 6 o'clock. Hopefully we will finish all those items by 6 o'clock. We will reconvene at this Zoom meeting at that time. So at this time, the City Council will adjourn to the closed session Zoom and we will return here again at 6 o'clock. We'll see you all in a moment, everyone.
Are you ready to record?
Yes, it is 6 o'clock and we are recording and broadcasting.
Thank you very much, everyone. Welcome back. This is a continuation of our City Council meeting that began at 5 p.m. this evening. This is Tuesday, May 25th, 2021. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George?
Here.
Councilmember Storton?
Here.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Here.
Mayor Ray Russell?
Here. Would you please silently join me in a moment of reflection? Thanks, everyone. And will you please silently join me in the flag salute? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Item 5 is agenda review. Does anyone have anything they'd like to reorder? Okay, then we will proceed as published. Item 5A is closed session announcements. We have none, nor do we have ordinances that are read in title only this evening. So that takes us forward to item 6, special presentations. And as usual, item 6A is our update regarding countywide COVID-19 efforts. And I will hand it over to City Manager McDonald.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Just a few items to note in our COVID updates. One is, folks are probably aware that the county is planning on closing their vaccine clinics on June 4th. So if anyone is looking to get either their first or second shots, that's a good time to get in there ahead of that scheduled closure. Of course, vaccines will still be available at other locations.
She ignored me.
So that's just one item on vaccines. Also wanted to note for everyone, as we look forward to the June 15th date, which is the date that we expect the governor to really lift the tiered restrictions related to COVID, we are making some plans internally at the city for how we're going to resume business as usual. And so included in those discussions are possibility for reopening our city hall completely. Right now, we've been open Tuesdays and Thursdays. So our goal and intent is if the plans move forward, as we think they will on June 15th, we will resume our normal service at City Hall, open again Monday through Thursday. If we can remember way back to before COVID, the City Hall was traditionally closed on Fridays while staff was working, but they took the day to kind of catch up on work items and allow those on 980 schedules to take those Fridays off. So that's what we hope to do, is to resume on June 15th. It is a Tuesday, so that week we would be looking to be reopened Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then resuming the following week as per usual. So we're really looking forward to that. We will be looking closely at the final guidelines that come out on things such as any mask requirements that may or may not remain, as well as potentially, I suppose, distancing requirements, although it looks like those will be rescinded as well. So again, just looking forward to getting back to normal there. Finally, we will be discussing resumption of in-person council meetings as well. Staff is evaluating our options for providing some form of remote participation, and either on Zoom or teleconferencing. We want to make sure we provide all those options to council to consider. We're doing that analysis now, and we'll be bringing that forward at a council meeting coming up in June. We're hoping we'll be able to have that discussion on June 8th. It just depends on whether we're able to get all of the information we need in order to have that discussion. So we're looking forward to that as well. So that's it from me on COVID.
Let's check in with the council and see if anyone has questions for you. Councilmember Barnage? Councilmember George?
No questions, thank you.
Councilmember Pauly, Councilmember Storton? Mayor Pro Tem?
No questions, thank you.
All right, let's open it up to public comment and see if the public has either comment or questions for us. So I'll turn it over to AGP.
If you would like to make a comment on this, please raise your hand. If you are calling in by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you very much. This is a receive and file, so we will move forward to item 6B. This is City Manager Communications. And again, I will turn it over to City Manager McDonald.
Thank you again. Just a few items to highlight and note for any for council and anyone who may be watching or listening. One, we wanted to let everyone know that our summer concert season is coming upon us, and our very own recreation department is going to be taking on that work effort for this summer. And we are currently hoping to be able to have our first summer concert on July 4th. Of course, everything is has that still, you know, asterisk qualifier around COVID and making sure that we are complying with whatever guidelines ultimately do come out. But again, we are moving forward with those plans and are hoping to be able to announce July 4th as our first concert of the season. More information will be coming out in the next few days on that. Also wanted to let everyone know that the Planning Commission at their last meeting on May 18th approved the Haslow Affordable Housing Project, and that was required a conditional use permit. That project is located on 700 Oak Park, which is the corner of El Camino Real and Oak Park. It is a 63-unit low-income housing project, and it was approved unanimously by the Planning Commission. So Just wanted to share that news with everyone who may be here and listening as well. We also are going to be taking the next steps on our circulation element update. So a final draft was taken and discussed with our Planning Commission in April. It will be coming back to our Planning Commission on June 1st for a final look and hopefully recommendation to Council for adoption. At that point, if Planning Commission does provide that recommendation, it would come before your Council for an adoption. We're just looking at the right agenda to put it on to make sure we don't overload anything, but that will be coming before your Council this summer for sure. We're looking at probably the meeting in July. And then finally, our next meeting, our first meeting in June on the 8th, we will have our budget discussion at that point in time. So just anyone watching and listening, it's going to be a big important item for us. We have prepared a draft biennial budget, so it's covering two fiscal years for us, and look forward to bringing that to Council for discussion. We're currently given the time frame involved, because we do need to get it adopted before July 1st, it will be presented in a way that we believe Council could adopt it. But again, we'll have another meeting in June in case we need to make some changes to it and bring it back. So just wanted to let everybody know that June 8th is a big day for us. We really look forward to bringing that forward for everyone's consideration and discussion. So that is it from me.
Okay, again, we'll check in with Council and see if anybody has questions. Councilmember George?
No questions, thank you.
Councilmember Barnage?
No questions, thank you.
Councilmember Storton?
None, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Pauldy?
No questions, thank you.
All right, I have none as well. So let's open it up to public comment and see if anybody has questions for the city manager's report.
If anyone would like to make a comment, please raise your hand using the raise hand button. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you very much. This is, again, a receive and file, so we will move forward to item 6C. This is our honorary proclamation declaring June 2021 as LGBTQ plus Pride Month. Forgive me for a moment to scroll to the right spot.
Madam Mayor, if I could interject real quick. Our closed session agenda said that we'd have a readout of closed session at the 6 p.m. meeting. So I think Tim was prepared to do that before we move on.
All right, let's do it. I'll give you time to scroll.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Sorry about my poor microphone control. Can you hear me? The successor agency to the dissolved Roy Randy Redevelopment Agency held a closed session to confer with its real property negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8 regarding assessor's parcel number 006-151027 located at Fay Avenue in El Camino Real. The City Council met in closed session to discuss two items, a conference involving a joint powers agency, the Five Cities Supplier Authority, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.96C. The discussion was regarding labor negotiations pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The Council also evaluated the performance of the City Manager pursuant to Government Code Section 54957B. There is no reportable action from any of those closed session items. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So moving ahead to item 6C, we have Heather Bonner from Five Cities Hope here to receive this proclamation. So I will go ahead and read it. This is an honorary proclamation declaring June 2021 as LGBTQ plus Pride Month. Whereas our nation was founded on the principle of equal rights for all people, but the fulfillment of this promise has been long in coming for many Americans. And whereas in the movement toward equal rights for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer LGBTQ plus people, a historic turning point occurred on June 28, 1969 in New York City with the onset of the Stonewall Riots, during which LGBTQ plus citizens protested against discriminatory criminal laws that have since been declared unconstitutional. And whereas LGBTQ plus pride celebrations have taken place around the country every June to commemorate the beginning of the Stonewall Riots, and now June is celebrated around the country as LGBTQ plus Pride Month. And whereas everyone should be able to live without fear of prejudice, discrimination, violence, and hatred based on their gender identity or sexual orientation. And whereas while there has been remarkable progress toward acceptance and equality in recent years, members of the LGBTQ plus community in the United States and around the world still face an unacceptable level of discrimination and violence. And whereas the Aurora Grande community proudly includes LGBTQ plus individuals, couples, and families of all ethnicities, religions, and professions. And whereas this June, we stand with our LGBTQ plus community in celebration of Pride Month. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Karen Ray Russom, Mayor of the City of Aurora Grande, do hereby declare June 21st as LGBTQ plus Pride Month in Aurora Grande and urge all residents to respect and honor diverse community and celebrate and grow our culture of inclusiveness and acceptance. It is my honor to put this forward tonight, and I will present that to Heather, and I see she's live. So Heather, would you like to speak on this?
Yes, I have just a few things to say. So my name's Heather. I'm here as on behalf of Five Cities Hope, as well as a 30 plus year resident of Aurora Grande. My pronouns are she, they. And then, so Five Cities Hope is a nonprofit that hosts inclusive events for the LGBTQIA plus community and its allies. In June of 2019, we were honored to host the first Pride in Aurora Grande at Heritage Square Park. We had the support of the Aurora Grande City Council, as well as other elected officials who all played a part in making Pride possible. We have held many events in Aurora Grande that have helped support our community. Although COVID has stopped many of our in-person support or many of our events, we are still holding an in-person support group for local high school and middle school students that currently utilizes one of the parks in Aurora Grande. We hope to continue to hold events in Aurora Grande and help give back to the community that allows us to create spaces for youth to freely express themselves. Proclamations such as this show our community members that cities like Aurora Grande are inclusive and willing to fight for marginalized groups. We thank you for your unwavering support.
It is our pleasure. Let's check in and see if anyone would like to say anything from the council, and I'll open it up to public comment. And I apologize that I didn't do that on the last one, so I will do that retroactively in just a few moments. So council, if you have anything you'd like to say, you can unmute.
I just wanted to thank Heather for being here, and I'm glad that we're recognizing Pride Month again, and I can't wait till you guys can do a Pride event at the Heritage Square Park again, maybe sometime soon, maybe next year for sure.
Definitely next year. We're trying to figure things out this year.
Aren't we all? All right, let's go ahead and open it up to public comment. And I apologize for not opening up item 6A for public we're good on 6C. So let's go ahead and open it up for public comment, see if anyone would like to speak on this item.
If anyone would like to make comments, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you so much. This is again a receive and file. That will take us forward to item 6D. And this is our honorary proclamation declaring June 4th, 2021 as Hunger Awareness Day. And tonight we have Garrett Olson, who's the CEO of Slow Food Bank, accepting the proclamation. So if we could bring him in to the panel, I guess we call it, and I'll go ahead. Whereas the Food Bank Coalition of San Luis Obispo County is the leading hunger relief organization in the county, and whereas the Slow Food Bank was founded in 1989 and has provided 32 years of hunger relief throughout the community, and whereas the Slow Food Bank provides the backbone infrastructure for hunger relief and is the primary source of quality and affordable food for over 80 partner nonprofit agencies that feed the hungry, and whereas the Slow Food Bank and its coalition partners deliver nutritious food to those in need to every community in the county, from Napomo to San Miguel, on the coast from Los Osos to San Simeon, and to points east, including Creston, Chandon, and California Valley. And whereas the Slow Food Bank provides millions of pounds of only the most wholesome nutrition, which advances and promotes important public health outcomes. And whereas the Slow Food Bank believes that the people of our county will rally in a one-day push to donate funds needed to alleviate local hunger. And whereas the Slow Food Bank is coordinating a countywide promotion called Hunger Awareness Day on June 4th, 2021. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Karen Ray Russom, Mayor of the City of Aurora Grande, on behalf of the City Council, do hereby declare June 4th, 2021 as Hunger Awareness Day in Arroyo Grande. So with that, let us turn it over to Mr. Olson.
Thank you so much, Mayor and Council, for shining the light on yet another vital community issue. It's an honor to follow Heather. Let me just give you a little bit of background. Before the pandemic struck, a shockingly high number of our neighbors in need, 1 in 6, experienced food insecurity. And in 2019, the Slo Food Bank provided 3.3 million pounds of food to hungry people in Slo County, approximately 2.8 million meals. And in 2020, food insecurity in our county soared to tragic new heights. And the face of hunger didn't just change, it grew deeper and more familiar. And I would be shocked if there was anybody attending this meeting that didn't have somebody that was part of your pre-pandemic life that didn't experience food insecurity, that for the first time in their life needed support. And during the first weeks, 6 weeks of the pandemic, as we literally threw our doors open to provide food to this community, in 6 weeks, we decreased our inventory 73% over a 6 month food inventory. It was incredible. Thankfully, we never ran out of food, we never rationed food, and we never deviated from our high nutritional standards. And in 2020, we provided 5.2 million pounds of food, or approximately 4.3 million pounds, a 54% increase over 2019. And as you mentioned, Mayor, we provide our food direct through direct distributions, as well as through partner nonprofits on the front line of hunger relief. And to bring it home to Arroyo Grande, we provide 4 distributions monthly to Arroyo Grande, and we partner with 3 amazing Arroyo Grande nonprofits on the front lines of hunger relief. And amazingly, during the pandemic, we started a third leg of service, providing a home delivery program for isolated seniors. We are very proud of the efficiency of our operations, where, and we get audited on this number, it's not a marketing ploy, we turn every dollar donated into an amazing 7 nutritious meals. And we're not just filling bellies. With our nutrition standards, we're fueling health, wellness, and development, which is vital because a third of those that we serve are children under the age of 18, and a quarter of those we serve are isolated seniors. And so on both ends of life spectrum, we're proud to be providing high nutritional support to people who devastatingly need it. June 4th is Hunger Awareness Day. It is our largest annual fundraising event of the year, and it is really important to us because an amazing 72% of our operating budget comes from local donors like you. And so in Arroyo Grande, you can visit us, or actually near Arroyo Grande, you can visit us at the Vons on Grand Avenue or California Fresh Market on 5 Cities Drive on June 4th. Or you can go to slowfoodbank.org at any time, like even right now, and click on the Hunger Awareness Day button on the top right and make a donation. We appreciate donations at every level. If you can afford to give a dollar, we're still going to turn that dollar into 7 nutritious meals. And if you can't afford a dollar, go to our website, go to the food locator, and find a place where we could provide you hunger relief. So thank you so much for shining the light on this. Thank you for your kindness and compassion.
Wow, how do I follow that up? Thank you for everything you do and how you managed to leverage and expand during such a critical time. I just don't know. You must be magical. So thank you for everything that you do. Let's go ahead and see if the council has anything to say before I open up to public comment. So if you do, council, go ahead and unmute yourselves.
I'd like to say something real quick, if I could, Mayor. First of all, I have to say hello to Garrett. It's good to see you. It's been a while, and just appreciate the work that you do. I had the joy of working with Garrett with the City of San Luis Obispo. He was in the fire service, and this is what he does in retirement, is he takes on the food bank and provides great service to our community. So thank you to your staff, to the many, many volunteers that help out and provide this needed service. But it's great to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you, friend. And I'll share with you, I'm not magical. I have the most amazing small but mighty staff here of 27 employees. And then we literally have thousands, as Council Member Storton recognized, thousands of donors throughout the county that lean in and provide assistance. So hunger is a community problem. And in San Luis Obispo County, it's being solved by community members.
All right, with that, let's go ahead. Oh, excuse me, Councilmember George.
Thank you. I just wanted to say thank you, Mr. Olson, for the incredible work that you do, especially during the pandemic. I know so many people just valued the food that you provided, and people who were at home and felt helpless. I know my mom was one of them, giving them an avenue to donate and feel like they're contributing to solving the problems. Your organization is fantastic, and I'm so grateful that you are here serving our community.
Thank you.
All right, let's go ahead and open it up to public comment and see if anyone has any commentary for item 6D.
If you would like to make a comment on this, please raise your hand using the raise hand button. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you so much. What great proclamations we had this evening. So it's been a good start to this meeting. This will take us to item 7. This is community comments and suggestions. This is your chance to talk to us about items that are not on tonight's agenda. Please keep your comments to three minutes or less and address the council as one body. Again, I will turn it over to AGP for public comment.
If you would like to make a comment, please raise your hand. If you're calling in by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you so much. So I will close public comment and move us forward to the consent agenda. Tonight we have items 8A through 8G to consider. Let me first check with the council and see if anyone would like to pull something for questions or separate consideration.
Madam Mayor, I just have one question. I don't need to pull it for Mr. Shane Taylor on item 8G.
Okay, Councilmember George, no? Councilmember Storton? Mayor Pro Tem? All right, then let's go ahead and go with 8G. Go ahead, Councilmember Barnich.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Shane's probably gonna, I gotta get to my notes, but it'll take Shane a second to get on here. Let me get to 8G. Okay. Hi, Shane.
How you doing? Can you hear me?
We can, but we can only see like a tiny bit of your head. Oh, there you go.
I'm sorry. My bad. Hello.
Hi. So Shane, I just for the public, because in case someone's looking at the staff report, for the graph that you give us every time you give us this water supply update, the gallons per day per person are quite a bit different than they were this month. Is actually April of 21 and then compared to April of 20. And for some reason, my notes won't open, which I'm going to have, but I'm trying to go to the staff report. And I think in 2021, it was 120 gallons per person per day. And in 2020, it was
96.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So I asked you, so to me, that was a little bit concerned since we are in a drought. And so I just wanted to, if you could go over the answer, why do you think that, because I felt like in the pandemic, people would be staying home and using more water. And so I felt like the two gallons per day were a little off. So if you could just explain that, what you think happened there.
Well, it's all about rainfall. Last year in April, we had almost 2 inches of rain. This year we had zero. And in 2019-20 rainfall year, we had about 14 and 3/4 inches of rain. And this current rain year, we've got a little over 9. So with the poor rainfall, that makes people have to water more to keep their landscaping going. So overall, that's the increase. It's water use in per capita per day per person is very directly correlated to how much rainfall we've had. Surprisingly, our indoor use, from what I can tell, watching the numbers through the pandemic, really didn't change that much. Our indoor use is pretty solidly in the 80s. You know, the per capita per day, I do in this report, I have to submit to the state what our residential per capita is. And it's staying under 100 consistently. And in the winter, if we get any rain, it gets down in the 70s or 60s gallons a day per person. So it's all about the rainfall and the lack of rainfall that's increased that per capita number.
Okay, so that made me feel a lot better, because if you think it's due to just people having to water because we're not having the rain, so it's not necessarily the people's habits have all of a sudden changed inside their home, which made me feel better. I think we're still doing, our residents are still doing a great job, but obviously if we don't get rain, they have to water outside. So that's why the small increase.
Yeah, and again, all the efforts the city has put forth in its water conservation programs previously and currently, like I said, there's very few residents out there that do not have low flow toilets, the proper faucet aerators, shower heads. There's almost everything's been retrofitted, and that is permanent reduction, and it keeps the numbers consistent. So we've realized indoor savings, indoor use has dropped because of that, and it stays pretty consistent. What the variable is the amount of rainfall and the irrigation.
Okay, thank you, Shane. Thanks for being here to answer that question publicly. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're most welcome.
Thank you. All right, we'll go ahead at this time and open it up to public comment and see if there's anyone who would like to comment on items 8A through 8G inclusive. I will again turn it over to AGP.
If you would like to make a comment, please raise your hand. Madam Mayor, there are no raised hands.
Thank you very much. And I'll bring it back around to the council for potential comment or action. Councilman Barnage, I see your mic is off.
Madam Mayor, I would move for an approval of items 8A through 8G.
I will second.
Okay, we have a motion to second. Any discussion? Okay, City Clerk Mattson, can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes. For item 9A, this is our public hearing to discuss and consider a resolution levying an annual assessment for the Arroyo Grande Tourism Business Improvement District, or the AGT bid, and adoption of a resolution adopting the fiscal year 2021-22 budget. I will turn it over to City Manager McDonald.
Thank you. I have prepared a brief PowerPoint, and then I also see Jocelyn Brennan from the South County Chambers of Commerce is available as well to help answer questions. Jocelyn and the chamber help administer the AGT bid, so I'll just go ahead and share my screen. Mostly help me organize myself for a discussion this evening. So we are here for a public hearing to discuss and consider this resolution to levy the annual assessment as read by our mayor. Just a little background, the Arroyo Grande Tourism Business Improvement District, or the AGT bid, was created in 2013. The purpose of this district is to produce some revenue to defray costs of services, activities, and programs that promote lodging businesses that are within the TBID, through the promotion of scenic, recreational, cultural, and other attractions that are part of the TBID, again, as a tourist destination. The amount of the funding comes from a 2% assessment on the amount charged per occupied room per night for all transient occupancies. So this applies to our hotels as well as any vacation rentals in our city. And that is also part of the TBID. As what's in front of you this evening is part of our annual assessment review process. And a preliminary step for this process includes the advisory board meets and creates an annual report. This annual report for the year 2020 was prepared and then presented to council and approved on April 27th of 2021. The process that we follow is laid out for us in the Streets and Highways Code, and it has us adopt a resolution of intention to levy the annual assessment for our upcoming fiscal year. This occurred also on April 27th of this year. We are now at this step of conducting a hearing to receive any written or oral protests against continuation of the AGT bid. This is what's being presented to your council for consideration and adoption today, as well as conducting the hearing. In addition, we are presenting the AGT bid proposed budget for the upcoming fiscal year 2021 to 22. A few items of note as part of this proposed budget. First, it was reviewed and approved by the advisory board. It is based on anticipated year-end results for this fiscal year, in which we expect to collect roughly $136,000. Projections are lower for the upcoming fiscal year compared to previous years pre-COVID, really because of COVID's impact on tourism. However, the projections do anticipate a 9% increase compared to this current fiscal year. So we are thinking things are going to look up a bit for this upcoming fiscal year compared to this one, although not quite the same as what they were pre-COVID. Included in this budget is a recommendation to provide $5,000 from the AGT bid to the city's general fund in order to help provide some funding for vacation rental code compliance services that will be rendered by our staff neighborhood services technician. The proposed budget also proposes to appropriate roughly $93,000 from the fund balance. So this is dipping into that reserve, which is estimated to be about $250,000 for this next fiscal year. So this slide just gives you the budget itself. This is in the resolution that's being proposed for adoption for approving the budget for this upcoming fiscal year. So it does identify that the chamber does administer this contract, and so their services are included, as well as the services of the advertising. Verdin has been providing advertising and marketing services for the AGT bid. The reason we accumulated a fund balance was because there wasn't a marketing consultant on board for some period of time, and so it allowed the fund balance to accumulate, and so that's why the recommendation to spend a portion of that we felt was appropriate. So with that, our recommendation comes from our staff report. It is to recommend that the City Council conduct the public hearing to receive testimony regarding the council's intention to continue the AGT bid and levy an annual assessment for fiscal year 2021-22, determine whether a legally sufficient number of protests have been made to that intention to continue levying the assessment. If a legally sufficient protest is not made, then we are recommending that council adopt a resolution confirming the advisory board's report and levying the annual assessment for the upcoming fiscal year. And finally adopt a resolution approving the AGT bid budget for fiscal year 21-22. And finally, again, Jocelyn Brennan from South County Chambers of Commerce is also available to answer any questions. So with that, that's it, the end of my portion.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the council and see if they have questions. Councilmember Storton, any questions?
I don't have any questions, thank you.
Councilmember Barnidge, any questions?
No, thank you.
Councilmember George?
No questions, Mayor. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
No questions. Thanks.
I do have two. Whitney, can you please remind me what the projected 2021 TOT was supposed to be? And maybe Nicole can help me out.
We'll see who can get to it first, probably Nicole.
Are you talking about for TBID or for actual TOT?
Actual TOT.
Okay.
Actually, no, I take that back, for TBID.
The TBID original budget was for $100,000 even.
No, that was the projected amount that we were going to take in?
For revenues, yes.
Okay.
It looks like our budget indicates 136,250 for revenues for TBID assessments for fiscal year, for this upcoming fiscal year.
Now, I was going backwards a year.
So oh, I see. 2020. Okay, thank you.
I was asking what we predicted because we said that we didn't meet predictions, but we did better than last year with COVID. So I'm asking what the prediction was. I'll tell you why I'm asking the question. Maybe you can help me. And maybe this question is best asked to Jocelyn. And I'm sorry that I didn't think to ask it before tonight. So Jocelyn, forgive me for popping in and asking you an unexpected question. So we're appropriating 90 something thousand dollars potentially tonight from the fund balance. Totally get that. Totally support ramping up, getting back on board as we come out of COVID. But my concern is that we've spent quite a bit in the last couple of years, and we'll be going out to RFP next year for our marketing committee. And I want to make sure that we are spending within what we're actually bringing in going forward. So can you just kind of give us a little assurance on that?
Sure. Part of the fund balance is there because we have come in under budget as well. So that's something to keep in mind. And I assume that we'll probably come in under budget again this year. The projections are very conservative. So I'm confident that we'll come in over budget on revenue and under budget on expenses. It's just really hard to predict. So we did pull, you know, a lot of information from Visit California and Visit SoCal and try to predict the future. I think there should always be a fund balance. I think if we learned anything from COVID, it's that, you know, I don't even want to jinx anything or say anything that else that could happen. But it's important to have a continue a fund balance. So I think once we get through this next fiscal year, we'll be back on numbers that we can project on and stay within that budget and not have to pull from the fund balance any further.
Perfect. That was what I was hoping you were going to say. And forgive me, my second question, Whitney, I might have missed it in your presentation. Have we received enough protests?
I think, good question. I will double check with City Clerk Jessica Mattson to just double check to make sure we haven't received any protests.
We have not received any protests.
Thank you very much. All right, at this time then I will open it up to public comment. So I'll turn it over to AGP to administer that.
If you would like to make a comment, please raise your hand. If you're calling in by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. I see one hand raised. Phone caller with the number ending in 596. Please unmute yourself and make your comments. Phone caller with number ending in 596, please unmute yourself. You may have to dial *6 to unmute yourself.
Hi, my name is Jamie Fordyce. Can you hear me?
Is this? Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, thank you. I'd like to thank the council for taking steps to recognize June as Pride Month. My family and I have lived here for 4 years, and
Jamie,
we have experienced. Yeah?
Jamie, forgive me. Can I hold you back until we get to that item?
Sure. Sorry.
That's okay. We'll finish this one up and then we'll package all that together on the next item.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, that was the only speaker for this item.
Okay. then I hate having to do that. But thank you very much for your understanding, Jamie. And I will bring this back or a closed public comment for item 9A and bring it back around to the council. I will check in with council for comments. Councilmember George.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm in support of moving forward with this item.
Councilmember Storton.
I am in support as well. Thank you.
Councilmember Barnage.
I'm in support of moving forward. Thank you.
And Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
I'm also in support, Mayor. I'd be happy to make a motion. I'll move staff's recommendation.
Councilmember George, I'll second.
Do we have any discussion? Okay, City Clerk Mattson, can we get a roll call, please?
Okay, and this will be for the first resolution. We have two. Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Bressa?
Yes. Do you need a separate motion for the other one?
Yes, please.
I'm happy to make it. Would you like me to read the title as well?
Sure, that'd be great.
Okay. I will move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande adopting the fiscal year 2021-22 budget for the Arroyo Grande Tourism Business Improvement District.
Councilmember Storton will second.
Any discussion? Okay, can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Bressa?
Yes. For item 10, old business, we have none. So this takes us to item 11A. This is discussion and consideration of adoption of a resolution establishing a city flag display policy and authorizing the display of the LGBTQ plus pride flag at City Hall during the month of June 2021. City Manager McDonald.
Thank you very much. We are happy to present this item for consideration and discussion this evening. It is really a two-part item. One is to consider establishing a city flag display policy, and the other is to authorize the display of the LGBTQ pride flag at the city at City Hall as well as Heritage Square Park for the month of June, really correlating quite well with our proclamation that was included earlier in our agenda to recognize Pride Month. We do realize, really just a couple hours ahead of our meeting that the agenda packet for this item did not originally include a resolution. And so just as a housekeeping item, I'd like to share the screen in order to make sure folks can see that, see what's being proposed for adoption by our council this evening. Let me just make sure I pull up the right item. And this resolution, it corresponds with the policy itself. It's intended to enable our council to have that policy adopted and in effect. And so it has been presented to council as a supplemental memo, and it is available, I believe. I suppose I could check with our city clerk to make sure it's available as well online for the public if anybody would like to take a look at it. So the resolution itself discusses the purpose of the policy and then has the council adopt the policy itself. And so the policy, again, it indicates the staff report and the policy itself indicates that the council declares that flagpoles owned and maintained by the City of Arroyo Grande are not intended to serve as a forum for free expression by the public, but rather as a non-public forum for the display of the United States flag, the state of California flag, city flags, and any commemorative flag authorized by the city council as an expression of the city council's official sentiments, which is really known as government speech. So I'll stop sharing our resolution here and just make a couple of additional remarks and observations before we open up the discussion with council. Again, we were able to put this policy together as a way of enabling our city to use its flagpoles as expression of the city's speech itself. the opportunity to correlate that with the Pride flag this month made a lot of sense. The Pride flag did really give us an opportunity to take a look at our existing policies and do some additional research on the law that applies to the display of flags on city-owned property and prepare this policy that we think is going to help enable us to make choices about what kinds of flags go on our poles, and then to, as proposed, go ahead and hoist the Pride flag for the entire month of June. So with that, unless there were the city attorney, Tim Carmel, also helped prepare the policy and looked at all the potential legal issues and ramifications there. As indicated, trying to recall, I know if the staff report, I can't recall, indicates this or not, but our city council has adopted priorities both last year and for the upcoming fiscal years to support diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. And so this step that we're proposing for council this evening to discuss and take, we believe is in really good alignment with that approach. As discussed, I think, in the proclamation for Pride Month as well, it is our intent, I think, as staff in putting this together to provide the city an opportunity to help make that declaration of support for the members of our community who are also members of the LGBTQ community, and just make sure we're expressing that welcoming message for everyone. But again, this is up for council's discussion, and we're here to answer any questions at this point.
Thank you very much. Let's check in with the council and see if anyone has questions. Councilmember Barnett, any questions?
I had two questions and I had those answered before the meeting. Thank you.
Councilmember George, any questions?
Yes, just some clarifying questions for the public. How many flag poles do we, does the city have in Aurora Grande?
I can attempt to answer that, but I hopefully our assistant city manager, Bill Robeson, and public works director is also here. You can clarify if I miss any. We do have flag poles at City Hall. We have one flagpole at Heritage Square Park, at Elm Street Park, and as well as our police station. I believe there's one flagpole at our corporation's yard as well. And so did I catch all of those? I don't know if we, Elm Street Park, I think perhaps encompasses the our rec building, and that's the site of that flag that I'm thinking of. Is that right?
Okay, thank you for that. And when we are proposing to fly the Pride flag, which pole are we proposing to fly it on, or will it be on all of the poles?
So we are currently, the way the policy is drafted, it would allow commemorative flags such as the Pride flag to be flown at City Hall and at Heritage Square Park. So we, and it's really just an attempt to, I think, simplify things. And so we would, we are proposing to fly the flag at both of those locations. The policy itself also has a certain, it dictates the order in which the flags are to appear between the poles. And I believe that's something that's pretty common practice, if not potentially dictated by statute even.
Okay, thank you. Those were my only questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Storton, any questions?
Thank you. Just one question just for public knowledge, and I think it does refer to it in the flag policy, but it's good to bring it out in the open. As far as the availability to fly a commemorative flag, it's initiated by city council members. It's not like there's a application process for the public or any other means to do that other than individuals petitioning their individual council members to bring it up for discussion and potential use at a later time.
That's correct. That is the way the policy is currently drafted. And we can talk if anyone has any questions about how that would work or sort of the rationale behind it, we can talk more as well.
Thank you.
And Mayor Pro Tem Paulding, any questions?
Just two questions, Mayor. The first relates to the provision under paragraph 3. On the actual policy, subparagraph D, that, or actually C, that speaks to a majority of council members needing meeting to agree to display the commemorative flag. And I'm thinking about future councils and other types of commemorative flags that might want to be displayed by those councils in the future, and wondering if a supermajority requirement could be an important consideration for this council to take into account, to just really add an additional layer of, representation in order to really move forward with that commemorative flag. And is that something staff has considered?
I don't think we, either way, I think is works just fine from our standpoint. And so I think I understand the concern or consideration. And so I believe that it's really up to your council how you would like that vote to be required. Most actions of the city council require a simple majority. And so I think this was just going along with what's typically required or of other types of actions, but it's certainly something that would be easy enough for us to change in the policy itself.
Okay, thank you. And then this question may be for Tim, but I do really appreciate the level of legal analysis, constitutional law analysis that went into making sure that our policy is on strong footing, and just wondering if we anticipate changes in the law at this point in time that would somehow put our policy in jeopardy.
I'm not aware of any potential changes in the law. This doctrine was established in about 1991 by the Supreme Court, and it's been pretty consistent since that time. So I don't see it changing.
Oh, great. Excellent. Thank you so much. Those are all my questions.
Thank you. I have a question, and it I think that Mayor Pro Tem may have solved my concern. So in the past, we've been told as council members, because we did ask about the pride flag in the past, and we've been told that we ran into, if we had to do it for one, we have to do it for all. So I want to underscore and ask the question that I already know the answer to, but I want to underscore the difference between individual free speech and the government as an entity and its ability to have the privilege of free speech. So for those who aren't getting into the weeds and reading the staff report, Whitney, can you please comment on that difference?
Sure, I can give it a try, and hopefully our city attorney can correct me where I may have misstepped. So I think the policy is intended to really clearly state that we are not intending to create a public forum. So what we're sitting in right now is definitely a public forum. And so we cannot, discriminate based on viewpoints. Whereas if we are the speaker ourselves as a government agency or a body, not unlike, say, a corporation who may be participating in some form of free speech, we wanted to make sure the policy made it clear that our flagpoles we see are a form of government speech and government expression, or at least expression on behalf of our agency and entity, not unlike a private citizen who may have a flagpole. We have restrictions on our ability to regulate people's flags that they may choose to fly on their own flagpoles. And so this is really our way of declaring that we see our flags in the same way, and this is the policy we have put in place to enable us to make distinctions about what types of flags we want to fly and which ones we will not. And so that's where that comes into play.
And so without this policy that would be accompanying flying the pride flag, we would be in the situation where we would have to accommodate everyone, right? So this is enabling us to declare that this is something different, correct?
That's correct. I think, we would probably argue about it in the event that we put up a flag without having a policy like this in place. But this way, it states it very clearly, even before we take the action, what we intend. It also helps address those concerns because sometimes you can create a public forum on accident and then have a hard time uncreating it. And so this was, we felt was important for us to get this in place first.
And I really, really, really appreciate the legal backing to do what the council's intent is on the second half of this tonight. And then my other question was, you know, how do we determine what the council's official sentiment is if it's not written in policy? And I think what I was, that was a question I wrote down. And then I think Councilmember Paulding may have found a way around that for me, which is how do we do that? And I wonder, this one's an easy one because this council has over and over declared that diversity and inclusion is important to us, but there may be others. How do we determine what those others are? Or is it simply by a council member proposing?
The way I see that being determined is really through the agendized discussion of whether a flag. So first, a council member would need to request that a certain flag be considered, and then we would need to place it on the agenda for discussion. And the outcome of that discussion is really what establishes our council's official stance on that.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much. And Mayor Pro Tem, did you notice I really liked your idea? With that, let's go ahead and open up to public comment. I know we have a number of people here, so I will turn it over to AGP to administer.
To make a comment on this, please raise your hand using the raise hand button. If you are calling in by phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand. We have 4 raised hands so far. The first speaker will be Bruce Berlin. Bruce, please unmute yourself.
Hello, City Council and Mayor Rusum. Thank you for hearing me tonight. Thank you to the AG City staff for the staff report and for City Council for bringing forth this item on the agenda. I did send very late today a rather lengthy letter, so I won't go through the whole length of that, but just excited to see Pride Month is just a few days away, and in my opinion, worthy of consideration. Further consideration and recognition, especially in light of flying the flag, Pride flag in the Pride month of June. And I'm also grateful to Attorney Carmel for doing the research to give some justification for expressing the government's freedom of speech. I'm just gonna give you just a very short couple of blurb points that I think are important to consider. For some historical context and meaning, the original Pride flag for the general public was designed by an honorably discharged Army veteran and an openly gay activist named Gilbert Baker. It first flew at a Gay Freedom Day parade in 1978, some 43 years ago, and is now displayed around the world as a symbol not only of any particular political movement, but of general solidarity with the LGBTQ community. It is meant to recognize and uphold their worth as fellow human beings, created equal and endowed with certain unalienable rights, as affirmed by no less authority than the U.S. Declaration of Independence. It is about recognizing that LGBTQ plus people exist in our community, that they deserve respect and dignity, and that our community will not stand for intolerance or hate. This is about acceptance. Pride can mean many things, perhaps a high regard for yourself and those around you, or maybe a sense of patriotism for your country of residence or birth. However, for the world's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and other queer identified citizens, referred to hereafter as LGBTQ+, Pride is a celebration of identity and the advances that have been made in the fight for equal protections and human rights for the LGBTQ plus community. Pride celebrations span the globe in the months of May and June, sometimes with millions of attendees, like the massive annual festival in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and sometimes with rather small gatherings held in secret, like in Uganda, where homosexuality is still outlawed. In Rio Grande, we should celebrate and show support for our lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and queer communities' right to live out loud during Pride Month and every month. By flying the Pride flag in our city and on our flagpoles, we send a clear message that our town is welcoming and inclusive to all, regardless of how you identify or who you love.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for your consideration, and I appreciate all your hard work.
The next speaker is Miriam Shaw, followed by Marilyn Rosa.
Hi, Miriam Shaw, Arroyo Grande resident. I just wanted to thank you all for considering this, and I want to thank Councilmember Barnich for bringing this forward. I just want to express my really strong support in the name of all my LGBTQ friends and family members, and also as a person of color, when I see flags like this in my community, it makes me feel safer and it makes me feel more welcome. And I just really appreciate it and support it, and I hope it moves forward. Thank you.
The next speaker is Marilyn Rosa, followed by phone caller ending in 596.
Yes, hi. Mayor and Council, my name is Marilyn Rosa, and my family and I have lived in Rio Grande for close to 19 years. I am thrilled to be able to speak in support of this resolution, especially the item regarding displaying the LGBTQ flag during Pride Month, beginning this year in June 2021. I went to the first Pride in Rio Grande in Heritage Park in 2019. I'm kind of a Pride junkie. I go all over the place. And this one was probably in some ways the most meaningful because it was from our little town. I think in a word, it was phenomenal. It was a fun, family-friendly event, and I was so proud of our community. So now I see this as a major change forward for our town, and I know that many others are happy to see it as well and see the direction Rio Grande is moving in. So moving to incorporate DEI principles for our LGBT friends is what we are doing, and I... In fact, today I mentioned to a friend about this resolution that was coming up, and he said, and he happened to be gay, and he said, Arroyo Grande? And I said, yes, Arroyo Grande. I said, this is not your grandmother's Arroyo Grande. So I believe that the resolution before the council tonight is a logical extension of that wonderful 2019 Pride event. I hope this resolution passes enthusiastically and unanimously and is only the beginning of actions such as these. I am so proud of Arroyo Grande. Thank you.
Next speaker is phone caller ending in 596. Please unmute yourself by dialing star six. Oh, sorry. I think you were already unmuted.
Hi, this is Jamie Fordyce again. Sorry, I almost need a moment to hear all the previous callers. Really kind of made me emotional because I haven't experienced Arroyo Grande. I haven't experienced that much joy here. My family and I have lived here for 4 years, and we're raising our five-year-old twins here. And we've had some experiences in which we've been called gay slurs by neighbors, by people walking by on the street, and also just instances where we go to enroll our children in something at the rec department or at a preschool, and we don't fit on the forms. It's hard to be the one always speaking up to ask to be fit in, to can you amend this so that it represents our family, so that it represents our relationship, who we are, our identity. Flying a pride flag is a great first step for Arroyo Grande, and I don't know if many people can identify with this, but when you see a pride flag, it is an affirmation of humanity, and it is a safe space. And I am so thrilled that if this passes, I'm thrilled for myself, but also for all the other queer folks I know who live in this community, and also for the youth to be proud of where they were raised. I know a lot of people I know some people from Arroyo Grande who don't come back. They won't raise their families here because of how they grew up here, the climate. And I'm really excited for youth here to see those, to see that symbol, to identify with it, to feel empowered by it. And it can literally be life-saving for not only youth, but it just adds to the emotional wellness of everyone in the community to be supported in that way. And I think people in Arroyo Grande really do want to have opportunities to grow in measures of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think this is a great opportunity the city is giving to allow that, to create the space and to create that community. And I just want to thank you all for going this far with it. And yeah, I haven't experienced this much joy, and hearing all the support from the other callers is wonderful.
The next speaker is Virginia Roof, followed by phone number ending in 597. Virginia, please unmute yourself.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Virginia Roof, and I live here in Arroyo Grande. I've been a South County resident for almost 20 years. I had the great honor of participating in our first Pride event 2 years ago and running the children's table for all the kids. I'm raising three kids here in our town, and it was just an absolute joy to see our community come together around Pride and celebrating all of our LGBTQ plus friends and neighbors and family. And it was just wonderful. And it was so sad last year when we couldn't put on the second one, which was even scheduled to be bigger. And here we are a year later, now just coming out of COVID, which I'm so grateful for everything our town has done to help with that. And we aren't going to be able to have Pride this year. And it just means so much to me and all the many kids and families in our community that will see that flag and know what we stand for, which is openness, welcoming, inclusion. And I'm really taking to heart what the previous caller stated about not feeling that. And I want that to be what our town stands for. And I'm so appreciative of council and all the staff that were involved in creating this policy, and absolutely support our Pride flag being flown in our town. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
The next speaker is phone caller with number ending in, 957. You may have to dial *6 to unmute yourself.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Hi, so I'm Erica Andrade. I'm actually one of the organizers for the last Pride at Heritage Square Park and part of the board of Five Cities Hope. And I'm just touched hearing all of these amazing stories and just how important it is for us to fly this Pride flag, especially due to COVID. We had to cancel the last two Pride events at Heritage Square Park. And the big thing for me is I run a youth support group for LGBT kids, a social support group. And I constantly would hear stories about them feeling discriminated. I even heard a story about one of our kiddos being discriminated at Heritage Square Park. So I hear the good and the bad. So for us, having that flag up at Heritage Square Park is very meaningful. Kids are watching, they're seeing if their town is inclusive. So it's very important for us to. And I'm really thankful for Kristen Barnich for putting that on the agenda. And I'm in all support for the flag being flown at City Hall and Heritage Square Park. Thank you.
The last speaker is Kaylin Pope.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kaylin Pope, Arroyo Grande resident. I'm extremely happy to hear about this resolution and support it to fly the Pride flag during the month of June. Growing up as a member of the LGBTQ community in Rio Grande, I have been able to see significant change throughout my life with the introduction of Pride in 2019 and just hearing about all the different organizations and support groups in the area. It's very, very heartwarming. Growing up here was not easy. So being a gay person, you know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago in Rio Grande, not easy, a lot of isolation, little to no support for gay kids, gay adults, and those with marginalized gender identities. And I think it's so, so important to have representation and support among one's community in particular, because especially for the youth in our community, a lot of them might not be getting that support in school or in their neighborhoods, among their friends, and most tragically within their own homes. So I think it's very important to just, even just a small, you know, representation of solidarity like that. I think it is very, very important, specifically for our youth, but also for our older residents here, anybody and anyone coming into our town, tourists, everything, to see that this is what our city stands for. I think it's just a really great message. So thank you to the council for considering this resolution, and I hope it enthusiastically passes.
Madam Mayor, there are no more speakers.
Thank you so much. So at this time, I will close public comment and bring this back around to the council for commentary, and I'm going to guess we all have some. So let us start with Councilmember George.
Madam Mayor, I apologize for jumping in at this point, but I realized during public comment that there was an item that I neglected to show and discuss during my brief presentation, if it's okay. I just would like to let everybody know which flag we are considering, at least on the staff level, to fly. There are actually a couple of choices, and so I wanted to share with everyone what we are currently considering and a little bit of the background of why. So we are prepared to fly what is described as actually the progress flag. So it's the traditional rainbow pride flag, but it includes 5 half-size stripes in an arrow shape that represents trans and non-binary individuals, marginalized people of color communities, as well as those living with AIDS. And that's on top of the traditional LGBTQ rainbow flag. There's a little blurb here that I'm sharing that this particular flag was designed in 2018 by an individual named Daniel Quasar. And so that's currently what we are considering. And we've actually gone ahead and purchased a couple of these so that we'd be ready in the event that this was approved tonight. And so I just wanted to share that with everybody so you're aware of what we have thought. We reached out to Central Coast Pride for some input on that specific flag choice, and this was their recommendation as well. So just thought I'd share that with everybody.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Councilmember George?
Thank you. You know, when we talk about awareness, this is exactly what we're talking about. I had no idea that a progress flag was even a thing. So I was just expecting a rainbow flag. So we learn every day, and the efforts that we take to have these conversations helps us grow and be more accepting members of the community. So I appreciate, Whitney, you interjecting and adding that little piece. So first, I just wanted to thank all the callers that called in tonight for your overwhelming support of our LGBTQ plus community. First of all, I'm in support of the city flag display policy, which really came about because we wanted to have the discussion about whether or not that we could fly the Pride flag. So I appreciate this discussion. I appreciate clear procedures and standards because it makes all of our lives easier. I really wanted to take a moment and thank the member of the public who bravely came forward to share her stories via email to us, and the treatment that she has received being part of a lesbian community in this in our city. I want to thank Councilmember Barnich for taking it a step forward and bringing it to our council for consideration. The member of the public that came forward, her story is not unique, and we want it to not be, we don't want it to be unique anymore. We don't want her experiences to be common experiences moving forward. And I think that's really important that we support all of our residents and especially uplift our marginalized members. Supporting the flying of the Pride flag represents that our government, our council, Arroyo Grande, is committed to our LGBTQ plus community. We are here for you. We see you. We want you to feel welcomed, loved, and most importantly, safe. It's something that we talk about all the time. And I think that having the flag lets everyone know that we've got your back. And I hope that you feel that and that you know that. And when you see that flag flown, that you can approach us if you need to have conversations. I am proud to have been one of the first to attend the first Pride Day at Heritage Square Park. And I was looking forward to the next year's. Obviously they've been canceled, but I look forward to future events. Every step we take towards inclusion and diversity is one step closer to being the city that we want to be. So I support both items on tonight's agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Storton.
Thank you, Mayor. You know, this council has said over and over again about aligning our goals with inclusion and equity. And I think it's really important that we take this next step forward. I think there will be some people in our community that might not be as understanding and they're not willing to take this next step. But I think it's really important because not only is it a bigger, better message, but I think decent human behavior requires that we're still respectful and kind and love one another. And that's really an important place to get to, particularly in times right now where sometimes our climate doesn't really necessarily feel that way. So I think it's our obligation as leaders in this community to be inclusive and allow others to participate to the fullest extent possible. We have a large flag flying at the top of our flagpoles every day, and it's the United States flag. And the last part that we pledge to our flag is that it is with liberty and justice for all. And really, all is inclusive of everything and everybody that is trying to participate and live kind, happy lives in this world. And I think this is just the next step, and I'm proud to be a part of it. I actually couldn't make the first Pride celebration, and I recall seeing a picture of the four of you together, and I wasn't there. And you know, it's just one of those scenarios where I could not make it that day, and I wish I could have. But I am in complete support and support both of staff's recommendations. And I hope when it comes time to a motion, we allow Councilmember Barnidge to make that for her hard work on this issue.
Councilmember Barnidge.
Thank you, Mayor. So just really thankful and proud of our council for allowing me to bring this item forward so we can have this important discussion. And for staff doing the research and reaching out to some other cities that have a flag policy. And just excited to have this before us. I really, really appreciate the callers. I know that having to call in and especially write us, one of the speakers wrote us about some terrible experiences that happened in Arroyo Grande that frankly broke my heart. And so I'm just really excited that we're here tonight to hopefully do something that is a tiny step in the right direction. As we talked about, one of our top council goals is to encourage and support diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so this is, you know, right here, what we're doing tonight is absolutely doing what we say we're going to do. And I look forward to lots of other discussions where we bring diversity and equity and inclusion to this council to make decisions. And, you know, the flag is about recognizing that LGBTQ people exist in our community and that they deserve respect and dignity and that our town won't stand for intolerance and hate. This flag is not about being divisive at all. It's absolutely about love and acceptance. And that's all it is. The LGBTQ community is, as other people have said, and we know, a regularly marginalized group.
And I feel it's really our part, it's our role as council members and leaders to embrace differences and welcome everyone into our city. I spoke with a pastor this weekend who is part of that community, the LGBTQ community, and we both talked about how the youth are very much impacted by exclusion, and anything we can do to support them is just extremely, extremely important. So I think what we're doing today might seem small, but I think it's one of the most important things that I think we've done in a long time, and I really, really appreciate the council allowing this to come before us and make this decision. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Pauly.
Thank you. I completely support agree with all of the comments of my colleagues. I'll have a few specific comments related to our policy just as a legal matter, and then go into why I support staff's recommendation in general. First, I want to say thank you to everybody who attended tonight and shared their comments and stories and thoughts and expressed why this is so important. First of all, I appreciate staff's approach to preparing the policy that we have. It's important that we're on strong legal footing to take this action. And obviously that the policy states that not any flag can be flown. The policy specifically defines a commemorative flag as defined as a flag that identifies with a specific historical event, cause, nation, or group of people that the city council chooses to honor or commemorate consistent with the city's mission and priorities. The following are not allowed as commemorative flags and will not be considered by the city council. And they're just three bullets. I want to read them for the benefit of the public to understand how this policy has been crafted. Flags of a particular religious movement or creed to avoid the appearance of city government endorsing religion or a particular religious movement or creed are not allowed. Flags of a political party to avoid the appearance of city government endorsing a political party are not allowed. And flags advocating a certain outcome in an election are not allowed. And then a really important part of the policy here is that as discussed earlier, in the question and answer discussion between staff and council, our council can only consider, or a future council, I should say, a request to display a commemorative flag if the request is made by a member of the Rio Grande City Council and another city council member agrees to place the discussion to authorize such display on the agenda for a regular or special city council meeting. Requests to fly a commemorative flag by members of the public will not be considered. I think that it's important that we have that check and balance in place. So not just any flag is flown. And as staff really clearly explained, we've created an opportunity for our council to speak, not a public forum that needs to be viewpoint neutral. And then another important policy function was that a majority of council members must agree to display the commemorative flag. And the reason I cite that is because I would like to recommend that our council consider changing that majority requirement to a supermajority requirement. And that is in light of the extreme partisan environment that we're in. I would hate to see a council in the future that doesn't take this policy seriously. It is, in fact, I think it's a very important discussion, and it shouldn't be taken lightly. And so adding that additional requirement, essentially a four-fifths vote, would ensure that the severity of this discussion is acknowledged. And so I would just hope that our council would consider that. And then moving on from the policy and to the proclamation that we heard earlier tonight, and then the action to support actually flying the Pride flag at city facilities, I want to refer back to the proclamation. I know they're separate issues, but there was something that stood out to me when I first read that. And that was, while there has been remarkable progress towards acceptance and equality in recent years, members of the LGBTQ plus community in the United States and around the world still face an unacceptable level of discrimination and violence. And I know that that's still here in our community. I know that we're all, as mentioned by my colleagues, taking a bold step here to, or and a small step, but to create and foster an environment of diversity, equity, inclusion in our community and fight for those who are marginalized. And I just want to say that I stand proudly with the LGBTQ plus community, and I support flying the Pride flag on city property for those reasons. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have a quick process question to ask of Whitney and City Manager McDonald. I want to ask about the supermajority thing because I'm intrigued by it. My question is, if we put that into the resolution, can a future council by a simple majority change the resolution?
I would think yes, that that could be changed, that the policy itself could be changed to make the decision to fly a specific flag a simple majority rather than a supermajority.
Can we write into it that to change the ordinance would require a four-fifths vote?
I think we probably could.
I just want to think ahead again.
Yeah. Hopefully our city attorney can weigh in and make sure.
I don't believe we could tie the hands of the future council.
Okay.
In binding them to change this by a four-fifths vote.
But at least it would be a two-step process.
It would be, and I think it's very meaningful doing it, including it in and of itself sends a big message.
Okay, thank you for that. So I want to just go, I am a history teacher, to give just a little bit of a history lesson, because as I said in my questions, we've asked this question before of prior city managers. I know I've asked the question before, and the direction that I got is that it was not possible for us to do this because then we would have to fly everyone's, and that was not something we wanted to bite. And I just really want to underscore how happy I am that not only that Councilmember Barnage brought this forward, but that staff found a way for us to do it. And that's the key. This was always something that we stood for. And we talked about this back in 2019 when we had our first Pride event, of being able to support that as a council. And the direction we got at that time was that we couldn't. So we found a way, and where there's a will, there's a way. And I think it's very clear at this point that this is the will of the AG City Council. I am really grateful for this policy because, as I've always said, policy protects everyone. And I like the tightening up of it that Mayor Pro Tem has proposed. So I absolutely support that. And I want to further just say that to the caller, that I think I see Jamie's cell phone still on there. On behalf of the city, I mean, we get to do this. We get to say, I'm sorry. And that's not acceptable. And it's not enough for a city leader to tell you that. We have to be agents of change, and we have to act with agency. And that's what we're doing here. And I have family members, several family members, who are members of the LGBTQ plus community. And if you are sitting here watching this and you say, well, I don't, I'm telling you, you do. You just don't know it. And this is really important, that when people don't feel supported, that they know that somebody does. And I do. And Councilmember Barnage does. And Councilmember George does. And Councilmember Storton does. And Mayor Pro Tem Paulding does. So you have five people that genuinely care. And not only do we care, but we are willing to put our names on it. We're willing to put a flag up there to do it. And that is that agency of change that I wanted to be when I got into public service in the first place. So if I'm going to change minds and hearts, then I have to be open about what I do too. And so I'm really excited about this. I support both motion, or both the resolution and the motion. And I would definitely like to have the friendly amendment to make it subject to a supermajority going forward. So with that, I'd love to turn it over to Council Member Barnage.
Thank you, Mayor. I will go ahead and let me get to the staff report. So I would move to adopt a resolution adopting the flag display policy and also authorize the display of the Pride flag at City Hall during the month of June 2021 and Heritage Square Park in accordance with the proposed policy. And I would add that a flag to be displayed in the future, that it would take a supermajority to make that happen. And I'm sorry, Tim, if that wasn't really wordsmithed perfectly. I'm just excited, okay? So you take it from there if I messed it up. And you're muted.
No, I'm not.
Councilmember George, I'll second that if Tim says it's okay.
It's okay. I just want to clarify for the record so it's clear and unambiguous. We're talking about Roman numeral 2C3C, which will now read, at a noticed and agendized city council meeting, four, in parenthesis number four, council members must agree to display the commemorative flag.
Correct. Thank you, Tim.
Okay. Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Okay. City Clerk Mattson, can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Barnidge.
Yes.
Councilmember George.
Yes.
Councilmember Storton.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Yes.
Mayor Ray Ressam.
Enthusiastically, yes. So this takes us to item 12. This is City Council reports, and I am first to go here. CJPIA has not met. I usually tell you wait for July. It's now shifted again to October. Because of COVID, they shifted to October last year. So you'll have to hear several more months of me saying the same thing. For South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, we have not met since our last, you might remember our last one was delayed. So I've reported on the last one. Our next one coming, we actually have two coming in June for the regular reasons, budget times and all that stuff. So nothing to report there. TBID has not met since last time you did hear or weigh tonight on item 9, the main business there. On the other, I wanted to report out from the main that you are going to have, we're going to hear it here at some point, but at the mayor's meeting, we had a presentation from Wade Horton from the county and Carolyn Berg on the regional homeless initiative that the county is putting together. And so I wanted to read you a couple things. I took just a few notes from that, but again, they're going to do a tour to all the councils. So we are going to have them here at some point. The CIO Horton said, he led that with saying that we all know that homelessness is an issue, and it's an issue where as government agents, we have to balance compassion with the need for order. And that's a really tricky thing to balance. And that I appreciated him putting words to that because it really is difficult. He acknowledged that there's been a lot of one-time money that has come in recent years and coming forward in the next year, and with COVID being able to apply some things. We do have a 10-year plan. We have an HSOC. We all know this. We talk about this here in AG. And he gave an update of things that we've done since 2008. So since that 10-year plan. And now he is talking about what we can do in the near term. So what actions we can take in the near term and what we can do to do some rapid planning for the use of those one-time resources. And then he also talked a little bit about safe parking programs and SLOCOG. He talked about cleaning up camps, and he talked about the trying to identify a shelter program here in South County. And he said, I'm trying to read my chicken scratch here. We need metrics. Oh, this was actually one of the other council members that asked a question, and the answer was that we need metrics to know what's working and what's not, so we have some idea of where to apply money. And the upshot of the entire thing was, and what the county is pushing is for having one unified strategy rather than having what amounts to eight separate strategies, seven. So there's nothing, there's no action that's been taken at this point, but it's a promotion and an idea that we're going to hear more about coming forward. And that really was the gist of the entire meeting, because that his section went a little bit long. So those are my reports, and I will turn it over to Mayor Pro Tem Paulding.
Thank you, Mayor. I have an Air Pollution Control District Board meeting tomorrow, a San Luis Obispo Council of Governments meeting next week, and the Briscoe Housing on Interchange Subcommittee and South County Transit have not met. That was a quick report.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Barnage?
Yes, thank you. Let's see, Zone 3, we had a meeting on May 20th. The reservoir is 37% full. We are in a drought, so please, everyone, do the good work you've been doing and conserve. There's 18,310 acre feet in the reservoir. We've had 11 and a quarter inches for the water year, inches of rain. Let's see, the geotechnical testing and design RFP closes on May 28th, and that is for there might be an issue with that second reservoir and where the water sits to sort of clean it before it gets processed. And there might a terminal reservoir, sorry, there, it just came to me. And there might be an issue with that. So we are having some testing done, and the design RFP will close out on May 28th. For that cost for the testing and the RFP, the design is about $90,000, which has apparently already been billed to the agencies, $90,000 total for all of us in Zone 3. And then, let's see, we had a presentation from Dan Heimel of WSC on the Urban Water Management Plan, and that's mandated by the state. It's a planning document to be completed every 5 years. It ensures supply meets demand over a 25-year period, so 2040 population is what it's looking at, and that's projected to be 19,162 for Arroyo Grande, so it looks at that. Moving on to the Homeless Services Oversight Council meeting on May 19th, an update on the rent relief program. So there's all kinds of stuff to talk about, but just briefly, they're really struggling to get people to apply for this rent relief program, the state, and the nonprofits are disappointed. Lots of people start to apply and they don't finish the application. According to the stats that we were given, there were almost 50 apps that were started but not completed. As you can imagine, the application process is pretty complicated, and it takes about 3 hours for the Five Cities Homeless Coalition to complete the application with clients. So I can imagine people on their own trying to go in there and complete it. That's why it's not getting done. So let's see, the ones that aren't completing it aren't nonprofit clients that are being helped by nonprofits. They're just people in the community that are going on there and applying. They're basically giving up. Let's see, the county and Supervisor Legge are reaching out to the state and also to Senator Laird, and Jana from the Five Cities Homeless Coalition is also reaching out and saying, please tell us who these people are that aren't completing their applications, because then we can get in touch with them and we can help them complete the applications. But so far, zero response from the state. So that's pretty disappointing, because here are these people willing to help and have this rent relief help these the residents, and they don't know who they are. So still working on that, but there are some people really working hard on that. Let's see, they're also, the county is also talking about having pop-ups to get people to apply for the rent relief. That's an ongoing conversation. As you know, the rent moratorium ends on July 30th, so we've got to get people to apply.
some information that the mayor just talked about. There was an update to the Board of Supervisors, and it was a homelessness update. And our HSOC chair actually attended that Board of Supervisors meeting and told the board that moving people from one camp to another camp is not working. And so we have to come together, which is what the mayor suggested that the CAO from the county said as well. The HSOC is not going to promise to deliver a 10-year plan to end homelessness, but we will make a plan to make it less common and less traumatic. Carolyn Bird, as you know, is working from the county, and they are working with a communications person, and they're putting out an RFP because they want to have a cohesive, collaborative communications sort of to push out social media messages and to push out different things to the for all of the cities when it comes to homelessness. So they're going to get help on that, and they want to gain public support for the Blue Bag program and safe parking. So we're trying to really not duplicate efforts is what it all comes down to when it comes to helping the homeless. Let's see, the Warming Center, 5 States Homeless Coalition still does not have a location for this year's Warming Center. They cannot go back to the location they had in Grover Beach. And just my two cents as a council, we need to have a discussion sooner rather than later about possibly rotating Warming Center locations every 4 years, possibly with Grover, Pismo, and the county. And I think those are all my notes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I clicked in the wrong spot. Councilmember Shorten.
Great, thank you, Mayor. I just have two reports. The first one is on the 5 Cities Fire Authority. The weed abatement process has started. 92 properties in the city of Oreg Grande have been identified. Letters will be sent out to them. Hopefully they'll mitigate the problem. Otherwise, we'll send out contractors to go out and take care of the work, and we'll be charged back or placed on the lien of a home if not paid. So hopefully those get taken care of, particularly during fire season. We discussed, we're in possession of a Type 3 wildland fire engine. Its lifespan is 15 years old. It turns 22 this year. It's a heavily used vehicle, particularly during fire season. It's a four-wheel drive vehicle that can access difficult roads, rough terrain, and certainly during fire season. It's a very important vehicle to have. The purchase of this vehicle would be about $450,000. With a 10-year lease purchase financing. Because this is a needed vehicle, the one that is that we own now, its service life has been exhausted. But it is very important, but the purchase would go above and beyond the Third Amendment agreement that we have with all the cities. So at this point in time, it's been approved to go to each member community to be reviewed and included as part of the budget process. So each community will have to approve that item in their budget if the authority is able to make a purchase of this vehicle. We'll talk more when our budget is presented to us, but it's roughly $23,000 a year for the city of Arroyo Grande for that 10-year period. And the purchase would come out of Arroyo Grande, and we would acquire $36,000 in sales tax as a result of the purchase. This is a vehicle that's highly used. It's a reimbursable vehicle, which means when we go out and help other communities, we get money back for providing equipment and personnel. So often, sometimes these things, items, money can come back to help pay for the expense. But that will be coming up as part of our budget process. As far as the IWMA, the Integrated Waste Management Authority, last month I had discussed some concerns with some members looking to remove themselves from the authority. The county has voted 5-0 to engage in a study to determine what would be the impacts for them to leave the IWMA. That is yet to be determined. That might take a couple of months to get those results. But at this point in time, it's my role to serve on this committee in the best way I can. It has a 25-year history of great success. My hope is that we can continue to move forward regionally with our partners, with the county included. But if they were to choose to leave, I have no control over that at this point, and that really is on them to decide if they want to do that. And that's all I had to report. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry about that. I keep clicking the wrong button when I'm trying to do my mute thing. Council
Mayor?
Member.
Mayor, yes. If I could just interject just a quick follow-up question to Councilmember Storton on his IWMA report. Do we know or have we heard of any of the cities that are part of the IWMA thinking about wanting to formally like take a position on that and communicate that position to the county, I guess, because they're the entity thinking about leaving, or perhaps maybe talking about doing that after the study is completed?
I've in my one-on-one discussions with our city manager, certainly the city managers are discussing internally in their meetings what this may look like for all of us as we move into the future. Certainly that study will probably reveal some information that might be helpful, but I think having those discussions early and often in order to figure out the logistics of what needs to be done is important. So without speaking on behalf of the city manager, I know she's aware of it, and I know some of those conversations are taking place now.
Okay, excellent, thank you.
Councilmember George.
Thank you. So CAPSLO, Community Action Partnership, met, and my report out for that is, so really we focus a lot of our conversations on childcare, and we had a presentation on childcare resource connection through CAPSLO. And it's determined that currently 24% of a median family budget goes towards childcare. And with the pandemic, the burden of childcare has rested the majority on the women. And so they are not able to return back to the workforce. The facilities that we have, we're getting new facilities to come in, but as quickly as new facilities are coming in to take in children, current facilities are going out. So there's a really high turnover rate. We have 30 new licensed childcare facilities in the past 13 months, but we lost about the same amount the past year as well. We offer subsidies. CAPSLO offers subsidies. And in the last year, they were able to subsidize 1,800 children from 110 families, equaling $10 million in subsidies. So that was pretty, pretty incredibly high number. That was pretty much all for CAPSLO. Let me get back. RAC met on the 5th, and I reported that out at the last council meeting. Regional Water Initiatives have not met, and Visit SloCal does meet next month, June 3rd. But I did want to bring up an email that I received from them for council consideration. So if you could bear with me one moment while I find the email. It is from Visit SloCal, and they are asking if the council would consider supporting or putting forth a motion to support the Oceano Dunes Economic Impact Assessment. With the dunes closing, they would like to do a study that evaluates what the impact economically not having the vehicles on the dunes has and where to go from here. So if that's something that council is amenable to, I would like to just throw that out. And those are my report outs. Thank you.
I'll just jump in on that, Councilmember George. I know, I think I had actually tried to mention that or agendize that when at a meeting when you weren't in attendance. And I'd be happy to have that discussion, at least to the extent that when we look at the use and operation and the future of the Oceano Dunes, to me, if we're looking at it from an Aurora Grande perspective, we would want to know things like, well, if the people that are visiting the area are, say, not camping at the beach but are using the beach and then coming inland and staying in our hotels and our restaurants and things like that, then that would be a benefit, economic benefit to the city of Aurora Grande. And so I know that the region is kind of participating. I don't have a current status update from the chamber on that, but I think the intent was to get as many of the local municipalities on board with a small contribution, like $5,000, to help study that. And I do think that the implications of the Coastal Commission's decision to phase out off-highway vehicles will have an economic impact. And so to the extent that we can study it and be strategic and dynamic, is important. And I think there is a nexus to our city. So anyhow, I'd be happy to second that, and at least hope that our council would discuss that. And I'm thinking back now, I wonder if we could have discussed this under the bid budget item, because I had previously mentioned that I think it might be an appropriate use of money that's currently in the reserve for T-bid. So I'm not sure how to approach that, but I would look to staff for direction on that. Thank you.
Are you looking for staff right now to give direction, or just as part of the staff report?
Whitney, I guess I'll ask a more direct question to our city manager. If we as a council, well, now that you have two council members that would like to agendize this item for discussion, would there be a way to at least mention the T-bid option, at least to fund that study? Or maybe you could just help explain how you would approach it from a staff perspective. That would be great. Thank you.
Sure, yes. So I do think that this would come forward as a discussion item. It sounds like we may have two already. I just want to make sure that there was a request and a second to bring it back. And then in terms of the funding source itself, we can provide some options to consider as part of that deliberation and ultimate decision there. I do think from the TBID standpoint, because the budget was just adopted, we would need to amend the budget. And then the question, I think, becomes whether we want to, or I think it's a want to rather than have to, essentially run it through the advisory board to get their input on that endeavor and use the funding. It's interesting because I think last year we amended the TBID budget after it had been adopted as well without having gone back to the advisory board too. So I think ultimately it is a decision for your council. Your council is the one, the ultimate decision maker on the TBID budget itself. So that's something we would definitely talk about, I think, in the staff report in terms of sources for the funds and then the process that would either be advisable or necessary to get that accomplished.
Okay, that sounds good to me. Thank you.
All right, this brings us forward to council communications, item 13. So does anyone have council communications this evening? I have a couple, so I guess I'll start since I didn't see anybody jump. Councilmember Barnidge, you feeling all right? So I wanted to give just a very quick update. I got curious today of where SB 555 was. This is the one that we wrote the letter about the state coming up with a TOT collection system statewide. I discovered a couple things. First of all, it is working its way through committees and it is continuing to move forward. The League of Cities has taken an oppose unless amended position on that. They have a concern that we don't have. Their concern is if a city has already contracted with someone to do that, then that creates a problem because you have a contract with someone to do it and now the state's going to say they're going to do it. So I, as I understand it, that's their concern. I'm sure that will come out as it goes through the legislative process. I also wanted to ask the council or maybe ask, I don't know quite how to ask this because I don't know if I want to agendize it, but I had a member of the community bring SB 9 to my attention. This is the Senate bill that would make it ministerial, so essentially lose our discretion in lot splits in single family neighborhoods. So the idea is it basically takes away that single family zoning and allows it on a discretionary permit that we really don't have a say in. You can split the lot or put a duplex on a single family lot. So it would change the zoning laws. There is a lot of chatter with mayors around the state that are really, really concerned with the lack of local control on this. I know that it's on the League of Cities radar. League of Cities is in opposition to it at this time, or it might be opposed as a without amendment. I can't remember. Yeah, I didn't write down where League of Cities. I know it was either opposed or opposed unless amended. And there's a coalition of people that are trying to put together a big to-do about it. I guess I'm asking City Manager McDonald if she's aware of this one and maybe if we might want to take a position on it.
I must admit I'm not fully up to speed on it, although I am looking at it right now. I do know that there have been concerns and efforts around laws that the state has been considering around housing, and this is one of those, and the extent to which they are taking action to reduce discretion locally. And so I think this is one of those items that potentially, I'm not certain, but I know as an example, there were a number of bills that kind of got put on hold because of COVID, and they were housing related, and now they're coming back kind of full steam. I do not know from a kind of policy standpoint what, as staff, we would recommend on this. I'm looking at it now, and it appears that it would require the city to ministerially approve parcel maps for urban lot splits that meet certain limitations. So, as you mentioned, so it would, it does include some criteria that would have to be met in order to qualify, but then it would take away that discretionary ability. So I don't know. This may be something we will definitely look into it more and evaluate as well what's being discussed at the League of Cities level and the analysis that's occurring there. But at this point, I'm not sure what to say in terms of whether we would want to bring something forward to support or oppose. We definitely would want to do some more look into that.
So here's my thought. I will pass on this constituent email to Jessica to be disseminated to the rest of the council. And if the council is so inclined to check it out, and if anyone else has a concern as they take a look at it, I'm not asking for anything tonight. I just wanted to bring it to the attention of staff and council. So like I said, I'll pass on that email and you can decide for yourselves if it's something that rises to the level of concern that would... where we might take action as a unified body. Any other council communications?
I have one. As we near the end of the month, we near the end of Asian Pacific Islander Awareness, and I just wanted to share something today that I read. An 18-year-old Vietnamese girl, she's second generation Vietnamese American, has been named the 2021 National Youth Poet Laureate. And I just wanted to read this. Her name is Alexandra Nguyen. She's 18 years old. She's from Sacramento. And the National Youth Poet Laureate was established in April of 2017 with Amanda Gorman, who gave that amazing speech at the presidential inauguration, being the first recipient. So Nguyen, who is a second generation Vietnamese American, hopes to see the title to make an impact. And this is her quote: "Whether or not your voice is loud, whether or not your voice is shaking, your words matter because they are unique to you and you are able to tell your story in a way that no one else can." So I would just like to honor and end the Asian Pacific Islander Awareness Month with that.
Thank you for that. And with that, that takes us to item 14, closed session. We already did that earlier tonight. So item 15 is adjournment. We'll see you all on June 8th, everyone. Happy Memorial Day.
Thank you.